Welcome to the Mama Needs a Moment podcast. We are your hosts, Chrissy
and Cindy,
co-founders of Her Health Collective.
We are two moms obsessed with changing the way moms take care of themselves. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive in. It's always great to have you here. We're so glad that you've come back to listen to another episode of Mama Needs a Moment. In this upcoming episode, we are talking with Jillian Knight, and we are discussing financial therapy. Jillian is a financial therapist, which you will soon find out. And we talk about things in this episode, such as how does somebody know if they have a poor relationship with money that may require financial therapy? We also talk about healthy messages to give to our children. And we touch base with her about her financial program that she likes to work with, as well as a finance program that she used previously. And she found that this approach did not resonate with her and her husband. We are here with Jillian Knight. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of North Carolina, with 10 years of experience in the mental health field. She is also one of the first woman-identified financial therapists in North Carolina, which means that she specializes in helping professional women and moms feel good about their relationship with money. Jillian is on a mission to help women heal their relationship and start using money in alignment with their vision and values. She's a mom and a recovering people pleaser and perfectionist. I love that you admit that. Welcome, Jillian. We're so glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Something you'll learn about me is that I'm incredibly transparent these days. So
oh, that's fantastic. I love hearing that you're transparent. I think we all should be more transparent. It just humanizes everyone. It makes us all more level, even field, right? Even playing field. So aside from what I just shared about you in the intro, we want to know a little bit more about you. Okay. So you just shared that you're transparent and you've been doing this practice for the past couple of years. Tell us like what you were like before that and why you do what you do and what your current struggles are as a mom or a care provider. Just fill us in. You've got 2 minutes to do it. I know that sounds very short, but we love giving our guests a challenge.
Yeah, sure. So that's a big question. I work with women a lot of times who are like I was previously, or sometimes regress back into, depending on the day. I grew up with not a lot of money, but also not a lot of like understanding of money, and sort of internalized these messages about like money is stressful and there's never enough and women aren't particularly good at money, so I should probably find a man and get married and be taken care of. But also, I should go to college and find a career and be successful in that. So that's a lot. And I just really didn't think that I thought that I just wasn't very good with money. And I tended to avoid it, which only made me more stressed about it. And also brought up issues in my relationship with my husband. And so I had sort of kept therapy, like being a therapist, very separate from anything related to money. And I sort of found through my own personal finance journey and working on my own relationship with money that this was what I wanted to do, was help women stop playing small, stop avoiding it, stop letting other people take care of it for you, and really just start taking up space in your financial life, because it's not true. Like, women are actually good with money when they understand how it works and work through some of these messages very quickly. I have an almost 3-year-old. My current struggle is that I have an almost 3-year-old.
Yeah, enough said.
And I am a highly sensitive person. So I'm a highly sensitive parent with a very loud, spirited toddler, who will be a very strong, independent woman one day, as long as we can hold on for the ride. So trying to balance that with also owning 2 businesses and trying to grow them and still have some kind of energy and patience in life.
Oh my gosh, so much. This is going to be a great conversation with you. Even as you were talking, I was like, oh, I want to find out more about that and that and that and that. So thank you for being here. I'm really looking forward to having a further chat with you about all the things that you just mentioned, especially the highly sensitive person part and all of the messages that society basically tells us. I mean, these are common messages that we're getting out in the world around us about women. And I mean, I've carried them too. So thank you for being here.
Sure. Yeah, I'm excited. Let's do it.
All right. I am going to ask you a random fun question for our listeners. Jillian has no idea what's going to come at her. I have no idea what's going to come at her. So Jillian, I want you to choose a number between 1 and 10.
1 and 10. 10. Can I choose 10?
You certainly can. Yes. Okay. What was your first job? And I'm going to add something to that because I feel like there should be more. So I want you to tell me about your first job. And I would love to add in, what was a lesson you learned from that first job?
Ooh, that's a good question. See if I can even remember my first job. Probably I probably did some babysitting, was probably one of my first jobs. And I learned that I liked taking care of kids. And I thought that that would be something that would end up being part of my career path one day. And that did not happen. So I learned that I liked taking care of other people's kids, I guess. I like my own child, and that I could make some kind of money doing, like, taking care of kids.
Yeah. Were you in the camp, the cohort of children that grew up with the Babysitters Club? Was that something that you...
So I am familiar. I don't know that okay. I read a whole lot, but I don't know that I read it. I know that I watched a movie when I was younger.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember the movie. I was super into the books, The Babysitters Club. Yeah. I, however, did not ever babysit. When I had my child, that was the first time I had held a baby, changed a diaper, did anything. Babies were not my jam.
Yeah.
So good for you. I'm always impressed when teens are like, they were out babysitting. I was like, I was not. I was scooping frozen yogurt, Froyo, at TCBY, but...
Hey, we all have our strengths.
Yes, indeed.
And I, on the other hand, did a bunch of babysitting. That was how I brought in my money growing up. But my first job was scooping ice cream. So I have a little bit of both of what you were talking about. So Jillian, in the About Me section of your website, you mentioned that you're an Enneagram 9, which translates into the peacemaker. And then you already mentioned that you are a highly sensitive person. Just for those of you out there that aren't familiar of what the Enneagram is, it's a system of personality typing that describes patterns in how people interpret the world and manage their emotions. And a lot of this is done basically when you're young, and then you've kind of adopted these behaviors when you're young to try to help you be safe, feel safe. And they've kind of followed you into adulthood, but then we find that there are certain things that we do that are unhealthy and healthy. And that's where the Enneagram comes in. It's a very, very interesting tool. You had mentioned in your website, quote, "I learned early on to stay small and not ask for too much, especially when it came to money. Through years of my own internal work, I've learned to take up space and that it's okay and necessary to advocate for my own needs. I've learned that it is okay to want to make good money and that I'm more than capable of understanding how to use money to achieve my goals. My parents didn't talk to me about money growing up, but what I learned from hearing them talk about it was that, quote unquote, money is stressful and there is never enough," end quote. You also said that you got the message somewhere along the way that girls and women aren't good at math or money. And you had mentioned that also in your intro when we were talking to you about getting to know you a little bit more. And that you would need to find a man to take care of you. I can relate so much to this on so many levels. First of all, I am also an Enneagram 9, and I'm also a highly sensitive person. And I also have received those messages. I know. Yeah, we do. And so there's so much to unpack here. I'd like to start with the messages that we've all created about things in our lives. Everybody creates messages, whether we're aware of them or not. We interpret our world by creating different stories in our minds, different messages. How does someone know if they have a poor relationship with money that may require financial therapy?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I don't know that everyone needs financial therapy, but I do think that everyone could benefit from working or at least understanding their relationship with money. So on some level, that can also be done. Like, I don't think everyone needs to see a financial therapist to do this. But there is work that can be done sort of on your own, just even as like part of personal development, understanding. A lot of what I talk about with my clients is sort of these unconscious beliefs that we have that we're sort of operating out of. So even just becoming aware of them is probably going to be a big theme in our conversation. And so I think when it comes to knowing if you need financial therapy with a financial therapist, it's more about, like, a lot of times people have already tried a lot of things on their own before they seek out financial therapy. And they have either been, usually there's some level of fear around money that is getting in the way of them making progress on their financial goals, or even setting financial goals or prioritizing their financial health. So that can look like avoiding looking at their bank account and just sort of spending money, you know, looking at like, is there money in my bank account? Okay, I'm going to spend that. That's how much I have to spend, without really having like a plan and knowing like, this is how much I'm spending here and this is how much I'm spending there. So avoidance and just sort of kind of operating sort of blindly there, or there's really a spectrum. So it can be really avoidant. You could be having trouble making financial decisions, whether that's individually or with a partner, because I work with individuals and with couples, or also just you are working, and you have this sense of like, there's never enough, and you're like overly focused on making money and it's impacting other areas of your life, but you don't know how to get out of that. So there's sort of a range of like, if it's been becoming problematic and, you know, you've like sought out different resources, but nothing seems to be helping, because a lot of times people will come to me after they already have like a ongoing mental health therapist, but this is a whole other conversation. Therapists aren't usually taught how to talk about money or work through money stuff of their own, or to talk to their clients about it, because for a number of reasons. So then they don't feel like they can talk to their therapist about it, or they've tried, but it hasn't been as helpful as they would like. Not, you know, no fault to the therapist, because we're not taught this stuff. And so they'll come to me because they, like, their therapist can't talk with them about sort of the numbers also. But also they've maybe tried to talk with a financial planner, and I can get into the distinction between some of these different like financial professionals, but financial planners who, it's getting better, but sort of generally have had a tendency to meet with a client, put together a plan and like present the plan and not understand why people might be emotional about money or why they're not following through with the plan, even though they agreed that that sounded like a good plan. So whenever there seems to be a block there, or that someone's behaviors around money, thoughts, feelings, behaviors feel unhealthy and feel like they are keeping them from making progress in different areas of their life.
So let's say, from what you've said, someone identifies, I mean, I was in there just kind of saying, oh, that's totally me. That's totally me. But let's say our listeners have identified with one or more of what you've stated. What are some shifts that can be done right away that will begin to fix our relationship with money and start to begin to give healthy money messages to our children? Because that's where I'm nervous, is that I have my own issues with money and that I'm going to give them to my kids, and then they're going to just kind of carry it and continue this down the line. So I would love to learn some things that I can do right away to help fix it.
Also, I'll add, one of the catalysts for becoming a financial therapist and starting my own business was having a child and realizing that I wanted to have a better relationship with money to pass on to her, and that I wanted to have like a career as a mom that I was excited and passionate about. And I wanted to set that example for her. So just side note, because I think it's important. And so, yes, what can you do right away? I don't know that your relationship with money is ever fixed. I'll say that. I think that you can improve your relationship with money, and it it's been how many years that you've had this relationship with money. So it's something that takes time and sort of takes like intentionality around shifting. But I think the first thing that I would say is being really aware of what your current relationship with money is. So sometimes, like if you were to write like money is and like fill in the blank and write as much as you can about that, or write a letter to money and like think through that and look at what's sort of standing out to me as like how I would describe my relationship with money now and like where am I struggling in my relationship with money? Because you're not going to necessarily struggle in every aspect. And then the process that I work through with my clients, but that you can also do on your own with certain, I have some different books that I'll recommend and I'll share those today. So the marriage and family therapist in me has them go back to their own childhood and think about what did you learn about money growing up? What did you see from your parents, from your grandparents, from your caregivers, whoever that may be? If you had to describe their beliefs about money, what would you say that is? And what are some of like the memories that you had? Like, what are your initial memories? Because there's actually research that says your beliefs about money are pretty much initially set by the time you're somewhere between 7 and 9. And so,
my kids are older.
That's okay. That's okay.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Talk me off the ledge. Come on.
They're not ruined forever. That's like their initial beliefs, right? And so we often learn that from our families, right? Or whoever we're around when we're younger, and how they either, do they talk about money? Do they not talk about money? Is money stressful? Is there a lot of it? Is there not a lot of it? Is it something that seems to be an indication that someone has a lot of power or control? What did your family sort of attribute to money? Like, what did you learn there? Looking at that, but also there's sort of this period when it can be also during your adolescence, and it can also be sort of the period where you're like going out on your own and making money and supporting yourself for the first time. And then anything having to do with like becoming partnered and like what that process is like financially. So looking at all of that and seeing like, how did my upbringing impact my relationship with money now? And then becoming really aware on more of like a daily basis, like bringing some real mindfulness to any interaction that you have with money. So when you're in the grocery store and you're checking out, like, do you have like certain sensations in your body that come up? Because guess what? Money is incredibly emotional. And we tend to experience it emotionally and physiologically, but we don't always recognize that or like pay attention to it. So starting to pay attention to when I open my bank account, when I earn money, when I make money, when it's coming in, when I don't have as much as I thought I would, like if you have certain practices around money, or maybe you don't, just sort of becoming aware of those things. And then starting to notice, one, what are you telling yourself during those times about money? And are there things that you're saying out loud around your children, and starting to become like more cognizant? And it's okay to say like, we're not buying that today. It's not gonna make them think that you're completely without resources. I think it's more about like inviting them into the conversation, instead of like, there's a tendency to keep money as something that we don't talk about, or something we don't talk about in front of our kids.
Would there be an example that you could give on perhaps an unhealthy statement we could say in front of our kids versus a healthy statement that we say in front of our kids? Because there are things that we'll say, my husband and I, and I'm like, I don't know if that's giving the right impression, because, you know, kids a lot of times can say, I want to go get ice cream. You know, they just think that it will appear that it doesn't cost any money, right? Like they can just demand what they want. But then we have to say, no, we're not getting ice cream today. We've already done this, you know, mentioned something that we've already done that costs money. And then they continue. And sometimes we'll look at them and be like, well, are you buying the ice cream? And they'll say, well, no.
then okay, we're not getting ice cream. So I don't know what would be considered a healthy versus an unhealthy thing to say to the kids around money.
This episode is sponsored by Her Circle, the supportive and welcoming community for moms created by Her Health Collective.
Her Circle is a welcoming and supportive community for moms who are passionate about making change for themselves, their families, the community, and the world. Together, this village of women are revolutionizing the way moms take care of themselves.
From an active, private online community and the incredible daily chats hosted there, to our many virtual gatherings, including support groups, Moms Night Out, volunteer opportunities, book club, family adventures, coffee chats, and so much more. We love providing moms the chance to connect and create authentic relationships with one another.
The network of experts in Her Circle are a phenomenal resource and provide great learning experiences for moms on topics ranging from women's health to parenting. We cover the issues that matter to moms the most, from virtual expert Q&As to one-on-one wellness minute consultations and support groups. We are committed to getting moms in front of the information, experts, and support they need most.
To learn more about Her Circle, head to www.herhealthcollective.com/her-circle. We have a limited number of spaces and the doors only open a few times a year. So be sure to add your name to the no obligation waitlist so you are the first to know when the doors officially reopen.
So none of what you just said sounds unhealthy to me.
Thank goodness.
So <Woo! laughs> you're good. You're doing great. Growing up, I had no connection between getting the things I wanted and us, whether we had enough money for those things. And so I think that some kids grow up not having that connection. I think the biggest thing is like helping them to understand, like, we work for money. We live in a capitalist society. We work for money, and money provides X, Y, and Z. And so in order to have X, Y, and Z, we have to manage our money in a way that gives us what we need, some of what we want, and provides for the future. And so kids are, you know, their brains aren't fully developed till they're like 25, right? And so there isn't as much of a connection to like long-term consequences of financial decisions as there are once you get to that age. So if I spend too much money in this one area, then that's money that's like not going towards my short and long-term financial goals, right? We're trying to make that connection for them. And then you can also learn more about money if you don't know as much as you'd like already. And you can be talking with those about those things with them and around them. So my husband and I started trying to make a point of talking about having, so we try to have like money meetings, or we try, but she's three, so it's like impossible, but we're trying to figure it out. And so I'll pull up our spreadsheet of our spending plan, and like, we'll be talking about it. And she's like in the room, and I want her to hear those conversations. I think when your kids get a little bit older, requiring them to, you know, if they're at an age where they can work for things, requiring that certain things come from their money, and, you know, you will pay for things up to this point, and it's okay to like not buy them things. I think also there's a shift when you become a mom where you want to give your kid everything that you can, right? So there's like a part of you that wants to give them everything, maybe things that you didn't have, or you want to give them everything because you love them so much. And then also you want to teach them that they can't have everything they want. And it's like this balancing act of doing both of those things.
I think about sometimes from my child's perspective, I must be like an oscillating, because it's true. One minute I'm like, yes, anything you want. And then I get in my head and I'm like, no, wait, that's not a right lesson here. Let me pull back. And then I'm like on the other end of the spectrum. So yes, I feel that deeply. On your website, you share that in 2020, you realized the personal finance program you and your partner had been using was very restrictive and unhealthy for your mental wellness and relationships. You share that you're now working toward debt freedom in a way that aligns with your values and your stage of life. Can you tell us more first about the personal finance program you used previously and then the approach that you're using now?
Are you all familiar with Dave Ramsey?
Yeah.
I was wondering if that's what you're, okay, yes, yep.
So I have a very complicated relationship with this. When my husband and I got married, I had gone out of state for undergrad and grad school and took out all the student loans. He took out all the student loans to go to law school. And we didn't really pay attention to it for a while. We just paid the minimums. And then when we got married and we realized we probably need to work on this, like how we talk to each other about money, we looked at our student loans and it was $364,000. And we were making 95 combined. And so the program that was sort of what we knew of, because at the time, things are a little different now. There weren't as many voices in personal finance as there are now, you know, and we're in the South. And so we knew of Dave Ramsey. We had a book of his that we hadn't used yet. And I like read it in a day and I told my husband, we need to do this. And he agreed because I think he saw me as the one not being as good at money as he was. But turns out he's just somebody who tends to hold on to money because he's worried about it going away. So that's a whole other way of interacting with money. Anyway, so we jumped into the Dave Ramsey plan and it is very restrictive. Yes. So you create a budget for every category of your spending. You don't go out to eat. You don't go on vacation. Your job is to make more money and pay off more debt, and you don't get to do any of those things until your debt is paid off. And we drank the Kool-Aid. We thought this is the greatest thing ever because we didn't know. Like, he's like this older white man, could be our uncle, you know, bestowing this financial advice onto us that we didn't know. And so he must know what he's talking about because all these people have paid off all kinds of debt. And so we did that for like 3 years. And my husband has since started working with a bigger firm where he was able to increase his salary, but he was still working at a smaller firm. I was sort of hopping around to different mental health jobs because I couldn't figure out what I really wanted to focus on, not really making a ton of money doing that. And we stopped going out with friends. We started telling people it's not in the budget. And we started shaming other people for their financial decisions. And I was like listening to his radio show religiously, and his values don't align with mine because he's very conservative. He's very conservative and we are not. And so I would sort of be like, okay, well, I don't agree with that, but I can take his financial advice. There was a point in 2020 when the world caught on fire, figuratively and literally, with the Black Lives Matter movement and the killing of George Floyd and all of that. And his response to that was to have one of the people on his team who's a Black man come on his radio show and talk about how he's not racist, how Dave Ramsey's not racist. And that just like sort of did it for me. I couldn't listen to him after that. And had been sort of involved on Instagram with some of these different people who are now sort of like financial coaches and financial kind of like financial influencers, honestly. But I do think that some of them know what they're talking about. They're not just out there saying all kinds of stuff. There's sort of a group of us where we started with Dave Ramsey and we moved away from it. And they were doing things in a way that just seemed more balanced. They were saying like, okay, yes, you should prioritize paying off your debt and you should save more in an emergency fund first than what Dave Ramsey recommends, because $1,000 is not enough in an emergency fund. And you should not wait to contribute to retirement until you pay off all your debt because you lose compounding interest for many years. So it was sort of like, we started to trust ourselves that like, we don't have to keep following this plan. We've clearly changed our behaviors around money and we got to sort of decide, okay, now what do we want in our emergency fund? Where do we want to prioritize our spending? We started traveling a little bit for fun. We went to restaurants. So that was exciting. And eventually, as I started getting into learning more about financial therapy, realized that some of that was actually pretty little t traumatizing, that I like internalized those messages from following him for so long. And I would like have a hard time spending money, which is also a problem. Like, it's not healthy to not be able to spend any money. We think about it being unhealthy to spend so much money, but you also have to be able to do that in a healthy way, right? And so it's not just about cutting back on all the things. And so anyway, the approach is more so we started to take in information from a bunch of different people and then decide what worked for us, which has been a much healthier, much better experience. And it changes, right? Like, his approach is this works for everyone and everyone should do it just like this. Well, no approach to anything works the same way for everyone. And so it has to be individualized and it has to be based on your own values, your own priorities at the time. Our priority used to be getting out of debt at all costs. Now our priority is trying to have some money in the budget to have fun with our child while she's young, while also saving for a down payment on a house. Like, those are things that are important to us now. We're still paying down our student loans. They're still around. They're a lot less than they used to be, but we don't feel so bad about them anymore. And we can sort of like live our lives.
It's so important to have that balance. And as you're talking, what I kept thinking about is how important it is what we allow ourselves to be exposed to, what we see on social media feeds, what books we pick up, what podcasts and radio we listen to. I mean, all of these things are so influential. And I mean, you mentioned little t trauma from this plan that you had adopted. And all of these things truly, truly do impact us. And, you know, we talk about our finances and our belief systems, and still, as an adult, we're still influencing that based on the things that we're exposing ourselves to. So thank you very much for sharing that. It sounds like it was a tumultuous journey, but it has led you here. So that's a positive. How can a person determine what personal finance program is right for them? Do you have certain steps that you suggest a person walk through to determine what is right for them? I heard you mention really your values, you know, how you talked about a difference in values between you and Dave Ramsey, and you know, you talked about the values of spending time with your child when she is young and doing things with her. Those are important values for you. So how does a person incorporate an analysis of their values when it comes to financial planning?
Yeah. So I think your values when it comes to financial planning, and also side note, I'm not a financial planner, but I do talk to people about planning financially. When it comes to money, it's values are really what is most important to you. And it has to be what's most important to you, because all of those things that you're seeing, the social media, the things that all your friends are doing or seem to be doing, those aren't necessarily your values. And a lot of us tend to think that we need to be doing what other people are doing because that must be what is making them happy, because that's what we see on social media, right? But it's figuring out what do you value. So an example is like, my husband and I are not big on like buying material things, right? So some people, and this is no judgment, like some people really like handbags and shoes, the new iPhone and cars, like those are their things. And we just, that's not really what our focus is on. What's most important to us is being able to travel and take trips and take our daughter places that we want to enjoy as a family, and like those experiences, right? And so we're spending a lot less on material things and a lot more on travel. And so that's how you figure out like, what are my values, right? So what is it that is important to me? And you might also find that like investing in your child's education is more important to you than something else. If you start to look at where you're spending your money, you can also start to see what you currently seem to value based on where your money's going. But then you can ask yourself, like, is that really what I value? Or am I just spending there because it's filling some kind of need that is not getting met? That's sort of the under the deeper stuff that we get to. And so then you get to decide, where do I want to invest my money? Where do I want to be spending it? That's important to me.
That resonates with me so much. Both my partner and I are driving our cars into the ground, like way beyond its last leg, so that we can travel, because that, you know, those experiences are very important to us and cars are not. So your example resonated very deeply with me, actually, because we've been having car talks lately. We both are like, it's on the brink. I don't know, but we can hold on. So thank you very much for sharing that. I think it is important to pay attention to. Another thing, as you were talking, I thought about eating out, and I love eating out. It's also just something time-wise, and if I'm being honest, exhaustion, laziness, somewhere in there, you know, we end up eating out a lot. And I want to cook at home more, financial reasons, health reasons, all the above. So as you were talking, I was like, it's not a value of mine to eat out. It is a value of mine to travel and to have experiences and make memories, but not to eat out. So just even hearing you talk just now, I felt something click. I was like, okay, granted, I've had this before where I'm like, I'm going to cook at home more. So I'll keep you updated and let you know how it goes.
But also, as a mom, I can so appreciate the paying for convenience, though, which is not a problem. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, there are a lot of things in life that are not easy. And so when you can find ways to make your life easier, like eating out instead of cooking all the time, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That's just my perspective.
Thank you. Thank you for that. As I said, there are a multitude of reasons why I do want to start cooking at home. So I'll keep you updated, Jillian, but we'll start small. I wrote down a lot of notes, and I know I saw you writing away over there too. So I want to know what some of your takeaways were for this episode.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
I think one of the things that absolutely resonated, I'm sure everyone is aware of this to some degree, but she said that everyone could benefit from understanding their relationship with money better. And I think that's 100% true. I know for me, money is something I push to the side or ignore, or I kind of grew up with the message that it has a way of working out and we'll figure it out. So I think understanding that, exploring, as we talk about in the bonus episode, financial trauma. So understanding and exploring your own financial traumas. I have a feeling we all have some financial traumas in our history that influence us and bring that about. So I thought that was really interesting. She talks about exploring your unconscious beliefs and exploring how our fear around money and how that can get in the way. And a lot of that, just the terminology she used even, really resonated, because it's stuff you hear in therapy, but it's not always stuff you hear around the topic of money. And the other thing that really stuck with me was that it's between the ages of 7 and 9 that our initial beliefs about money being set. And my daughter is 6. So I'm like, oh, it's crunch time. I've got to get prepared, get ready. Like, I got to converse with Noah. We've got to come up with a plan of what we want my daughter's initial beliefs to be. So that definitely stuck with me too. How about you?
Well, that stuck with me because I was like, we failed.
But
she did. She talked me off the ledge. And something she did also say, she said, your relationship may not ever be fixed. And I was like, oh. And then she went on to say, but your relationship can improve. So I was like, oh. So it was this up and down of emotions. And I get it. I do. I get it. Money is tough. It's an energy in and of itself. And you can work on it, but there's always going to be a struggle with it, whether that's a societal pressure with it or, you know, so that made sense to me that we can improve it and take more of a healthy attitude about it, have a more healthy attitude with it, but that takes time. And we have to, like you had said, become aware of what our relationship is with money. And did you write down, one of your things was to write a letter to money?
Yeah, where she says to fill in the blank, money is blank, or write a letter to money
And as you do those activities, what stands out to you as your struggle? I definitely wrote that down as something to try.
And then I also wrote down journaling on what did you learn about money growing up, which is really interesting. And I think it wasn't a new thing for me, but it helped to hear it coming from her that all of our relationships with money is on a spectrum. It's not like black and white where you have a good relationship or a bad relationship. There is so much gray area in between and a lot of areas to work on. And that was really, that felt really promising.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I've actually noticed that myself so bringing in our business finances and then my personal finances, I am a different person when it comes to my personal finances with Noah than I am, for example, in our business with her health collective. So it's a different spectrum even within one person when it comes to different aspects of who you are. I absolutely see that.
Right. Yeah. And just really analyzing your memories around money. Yeah. So that all kind of goes into becoming aware, which I think was a huge takeaway in this particular episode.
Absolutely. Such a great episode. Definitely enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to part two of our conversation with Jillian, where we dive into the four aspects of financial wellness and which of those Jillian feels is most important. And then we also explore finances in your relationship. And I love this conversation because talking about finances with a partner is hard and sticky and uncomfortable. So she gives some really great advice around that.
We've enjoyed hanging out with you today, friend. We hope you got to finally enjoy a hot cup of coffee as you listened. Make sure you follow us so you're the first to know when we drop a new episode.
If you've enjoyed your time with us, let us know by leaving a review. We always love hearing from you. Until next time, stay true to you.